Okay, let's continue a little bit further. Let's get where we left off at here. I believe we were winding up towards communication. We were finishing with Corinthians 13, verses 4 through 8, which was love. We covered several different translations of that. Then the other translation of a young man had done Helen's brother, which gives you an understanding of what it is. Now, that in and of itself is going to come down to the problems being a lack of love, a lack of love for God, a lack of love for our spouse. And that may seem like a difficult thing, but it's really not that difficult if it's something you have in your heart to do. It's something you have in your heart to do. Now, there's a I'll just take those here. There's a story. Did you need that? OK, there's a story I picked up once that kind of explains a situation of challenges that men and women sometimes have, because when you look at men and women, a man's mind is turning one way and a lady's mind is turning the opposite way. But these two people want to be together all their life. We want to be together. Naturally, innately, there's going to be some bumping because of things. A man being more logical, a woman being more emotional. You're going to have conflicts and obstacles to communication. Men with the macho teaching, if they're out into the world's thinking, that is contrary to the women's lib teaching. And both of those are extremes of something that otherwise is good. You know, a man should be man enough to say, this is my house. I'm taking care of my house. Nobody's going to do any damage to my house. Machoism is an exaggeration of an ego that a man was given. God has given a man an ego. Women don't have egos. Men have egos. God designed a man to have an ego. That ego is what makes him kill to protect his family. This is my family. You don't mess with my family. I would do whatever it takes care of my family. That's in a man. Taken to the extreme is macho. Now, a woman innately is going to be more feeling, more sensitive, more emotional. So some women get abused. So the women's lib movement came and said, nobody's going to abuse us. We're going to be equal to men. We're going to be just like men. But each of those, machoism and women's lib, are extremes when taken too far. But even when they're not extreme, the difference between a woman being more emotional, a man being more logical, there's still going to be some conflicts because his mind is running like this, her mind is running like that. And the only way those people are going to live together in harmony is going to be through communication. The women's lib tells a woman, you know, go get yourself a job. You have exactly what he has. That way, if he leave, you're okay. The macho says, look, man, you got to keep her under your thumb. You got to pressure her down. One thing I'd read once where it says, when you know the honeymoon's over, it says a young couple got married and left on their honeymoon. When they got back, the bride immediately called her mother. Well, said her mother, so how was the honeymoon? She said, oh, mama, she replied, the honeymoon was wonderful. It was so romantic. Suddenly she burst out crying. But mama, as soon as we returned, Sam started using the most horrible language. Things I'd never heard before. I mean, all these awful four-letter words he began to speak. You've got to come and get me and take me away from here, mama. Please, mama, you got to get me out of here. I got to get away from him. And she says, Sarah, her mother said, calm down. Tell me, what could be so awful? What four-letter words did he use? She said, please don't make me say them, mama. Please don't make me say them. I'm so embarrassed. They're just too awful. Come and get me, please. And she said, darling, baby, you must tell me what's upsetting you so? Tell your mother what these horrible four-letter words were. And the daughter was still sobbing and crying. And she said, mama, he used words like dust, wash, iron, cook. Well, you might notice the honeymoon's over when you get back. And he turns and looks at you and says, what you cooking for dinner? You never heard him say that when you were dating. Matter of fact, you'd hear her say, I cooked something for you, baby. Here, come over to my house for dinner today. I made something for you. I cooked dinner for the family. Come on over. But then when you get home and he goes sit down on the couch after the honeymoon and maybe he got a few more days off work, and then you're like, why are you looking at me to do all this housework? It'll shock you. It'll shock you, especially if the back of your mind, you didn't perceive that. You didn't think that, hey, this is a 24-hour-a-day job. You know, there's things that's got to be done. And by all means, it should be balanced. It should be a balance of labor. But that shocks a lot of people. Shocks a lot of people. There's another one here that another one I want to read to you, kind of wake you up from your nap. There's a story here that says one day after nearly after one day after a near eternity in the Garden of Eden, Adam calls out to God. He says, "Lord, I have a problem." "What's the problem, Adam?" God replied, "Lord, I know you created me and have provided for me and surrounded me with this beautiful garden and all these wonderful animals. But I'm just not happy, Lord." "Why is that, Adam?" comes the reply from heaven. "Lord, I know you created this place for me with all this lovely food and all these beautiful animals, but I'm lonely, God." "Well, Adam, in that case, I have a perfect solution. I shall create a woman for you. This woman will be the most intelligent, sensitive, caring, and beautiful creature I've ever created. She will be so intelligent that she can figure out what you want before you even want it. She will be so sensitive and caring that she will know your every mood and how to make you happy. Her beauty will rival that of the beauty of the heavens and the earth. She will unquestionably care for your every need and desire. She will be the perfect companion for you," replies the heavenly voice. "Sounds great. She will be, but this is going to cost you, Adam." "How much will it cost me, Lord?" Adam replies, "She'll cost you your right arm, your right leg, an eye, an ear." Adam ponders this for some time with deep thought, with a look of deep thought and he concerned on his face. And he said, "Well," finally, Adam said to God, "What can I get for a rib?" "What can I get for a rib?" So what that is to say to men, if you're like Adam, your wife is not going to be your all in all. You can't look to her to make you happy, nor can the man look to the woman to make them happy. I don't even like the word happiness that much. I prefer the word joy. You can't look to another human being to bring you joy. You can't say, "I'm unhappy. I've lost my joy because my wife, because my husband." We have to get away from that as even being a statement that makes sense. Because technically, that person can do many things, but if they're not, you know, physically hitting you and things like that, you give your joy up. It goes back to the term of offense. You know, the Bible says in many things we offend, but it doesn't say anything about you have to take offense, though. A person will give offense, but unless you receive offense, you are not offended. And it's never anyone's responsibility for you receiving offense. So a whole lot of people will put a fence out there. A whole lot of people would do things to offend you, to upset you. You go to work, people do things that could upset you. But we have to get out of the mentality that you make me mad. You make me angry. You make me sad. I'm not happy because of you. Because, see, none of those are true. None of those are true. Yes, somebody could do something that you would interpret. You remember we talked about our problems or how we interpret other people's actions and our misunderstanding of what marriage is. If you wanted someone to cook and they didn't cook, why does your day have to fall apart? You don't have to get angry. You could say, "Well, I wish she would have cooked and it'd be nice if she cooks," but you don't have to get angry. You can choose to get angry. I go to work and I work all day and night. In other words, I, me, because I guarantee if you come back to the truth, she will begin to say the things you don't do that you think you do. Because it's always true in my experience that there are some things I do right. There are some things I do wrong. There are some things my wife does right, some things she does wrong. And any argument, no matter what the subject is, I'm always going to be to come up with something she's not doing right too, that she thought she was. And she's going to always be come up with something that I think I'm doing right, that she think I'm doing wrong. So it's futile to even argue that. It's futile to communicate on the basis of competing and shouting at one another about who's got more up on the other one. Because, see, that's not going to get anywhere. We know that. That's a circle. We don't accomplish what we're trying to accomplish when we're in that kind of arguing, that kind of bickering, and that kind of backbiting going on. In order to progress somewhere, we've got to slow down, relax the emotions, and say, "Now, let's see what actually is true here. Sometimes I miss it. Sometimes I do right. So I need your forgiveness. Sometimes you miss it. Sometimes you do right. So I need your forgiveness. Now let's talk about at this instance, at this moment, what's wrong." Now, I think the good spouse and the spouse who cares the most about the marriage is one who cares enough to communicate what they need. That means if a person says, let's say you were to come home and say, "Dear, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not blaming you, but I feel so unloved, so unappreciated. I sure would like it if you and I could go out to dinner sometime, just the two of us." Now, if she says that to her husband, that's a good thing because she's communicating to him. She's not calling him a bad husband. She's not calling him an awful person. No more than if he came home and said, hey, honey, you said you would wash my shirts. And here it is, I got a big business meeting tomorrow and I don't have any clean shirts. Well, he would like you to do that. Can't fall apart, have a fit on it. He would like you to do that. But that doesn't mean he's saying you're a bad wife. Doesn't mean he's saying you're awful. But whenever someone does really try to suggest or inform them of a need they have, we look at it as, so you're telling me I'm not a good husband. So you're telling me I'm not a good wife. They're just telling you of a need they have. They're not trying to attack you. But if we take it as attack, what does that do? That prevents anybody from letting the other person know what they need. For if they wanted to meet my needs, you would know what they are. Honey, I would like to be physically, I would like to have physical love, sex, as it were, 2 to 3 times a week, honey. So you're saying I'm not a romantic woman. So you're saying I'm frigid. So you're saying I'm cold. No, that's not what they're saying. They're telling you what they need. They're communicating from a point of need. She says she needs to go out sometime and get out the house away from the kids. She's not saying you're a bad husband. She's not saying she's a bad wife. She's just trying to share with you a need. But almost every time in our dysfunctional marriages, if they're like that, when somebody shares something that really can help the relationship, not talking about the kids, not talking about the bills, not talking about something that's not, but getting down to the issues that make a man and woman come into an intimate relationship where I can tell you anything and you not flip off the handle. And I'm not trying to force it on you. I'm just trying to let you know a need that I have. I call it communicating from a point of need. Communicate from a point of need. That means don't tell other people what they don't do. You're not a good wife because you don't do. You're not a good husband. You're kind of man are you? If they're happy, obviously they ain't having a problem with it. You're having a problem with it. So you have to communicate from the point of need. Honey, I need a little bit more attention. Now, how are some of the negative ways we do this? Instead of saying, let's say a woman does want more affection. Instead of saying, John, I sure would be happy if we went out a little bit more together. That's not threatening to John at all. John, I sure would be happy. Could we go out maybe 2 or 3 times? Could we go out maybe once a month? Can we put that in the budget? Boy, I sure would like to go out with you. You know, sometimes just to get out the house is nice. But so often we don't say that like that. We just get mad. Just go on. Then one day, just like, you don't ever take me anywhere. And it's like, John's looking like, what? What did I do? Because we didn't communicate in a point of need. Because really, you remember, you're the one that's needed. It's not they not doing, they don't behave. You're the one that needs it, so communicate the need. If a brother say he needs something, hey, honey, you know, I really need that if you wash the clothes, I need you to wash everything once a week. You know, don't just wash some of the stuff, wash everything once a week. Because I'm assuming if I wore it last week, I could wear it again this week. You know what I'm saying? Y'all laughing because y'all know how that spot washing is. You spot wash, you don't get everything washed, and you never know what's going to be available this week. But if you wash everything once a week, then you know everything is washed. That's what I'm trying to say. That's easy to do, especially if you got a lot of stuff going on in your house. But the key is, if he has a need for that, I need to be able to depend on this, that, and the other. He's not even telling it to her to make her do it or to force her to do it. He's just saying, I would like to expect that if you wash clothes once a week, that once a week everything would be washed. You know, I would like to do that. And now she can hear that as you're making me do it, you're telling me to do it. He should be able to say that without her thinking he's forcing her to do it. Because if you think he's forcing you, you're going to hear, I'm not a good wife. So then you get defensive because you're attacking me. And right after I'm not a good wife is, well, what about you? You don't hold my hand. You don't do. And that's not even the issue. The person who has the courage to communicate their own personal need in a way that they're communicating from need to the other person needs to hear it as that person communicating it. Let them communicate it without thinking somebody's blaming you. Are they saying you're the person who does it? And are they implying it didn't get done because you didn't do it? Yes, but that's totally different from blame. That's just saying this is a need I have. A physical need I have, this emotional need I have. But what we do is if we automatically take that as a negative thing, then we stop the communication and start the fight.
So the whole reason we brought it up, it just gets to a big fight. Okay, you doing this to me, I'm doing this to you, now you're doing it back to me, I'm doing it back to you, so let's just forget about it. And then you continue in your marriage not getting your needs met. Till eventually, sometimes you find other people to meet your needs. And that's what God didn't want. Finding somebody outside of marriage to meet your needs. The needs that a woman supplies to a man should not be met by a woman outside of his marriage. I'll say it like this. It shouldn't be necessary for him to get it met by a woman outside of marriage. Find out what do I need to do to be what you want me to be? And listen to what it is. I ain't saying you got to do it all. Some of it's crazy. But find out what it is. What is it you need me to do for you to feel you are so happy you married me and couldn't have married anybody else? And see, the point of the discussion when you ask that question is not to defend yourself or your viewpoint. All you're trying to do today, you don't want to get into what they should do and what they owe you, because the temptation is, how can you be thinking like that when you don't do this to me? Don't start the fight. I'm talking and asking him or her what they need from me to feel like they're God's gift to me. And that's not saying just because they say it, I'm going to do it all. But I want to know what it is, because perhaps some of it I could do. That little sheet we gave you, the blue one and the pink one. The pink one's for the girls, the blue one's for the boys, for the men. And you fill that out at your leisure, not right now, but you take that home and fill that out, and you can get an extra one if you're here and your spouse is working or couldn't make it for them. And you fill out down one column. There's 10 or 11 or 12 things there, and you put 1 through 12 in them, and you put them in the order that you think they're important to you. And then in the next column, you put in order the order you think they are important to your husband. And usually those things would be so different when you exchange them and compare them. It's outrageous. She believes, because what we do is we call ourselves loving the other person by giving them what we want them to have. What do you mean love you? I love you. I cook every time you come home. There's food on the table and you telling me I don't love you. Baby, I cook for myself, but I sure would like you to be ready when I get home in the evening, honey. That's what I'd like. Why can you say I don't love you? Because you're trying to love. It's the same old crazy thing as you're going to buy me what you want for Christmas. It's not a woman in here. Don't get upset when a man come in on Valentine's Day with a toaster. Baby, I saw you making toast, and this one can make 4 slices at one time. Here you go, honey. A toaster. Going to be looking at him like he's crazy. You're crazy for it. See, because you're giving somebody what you want them to have. You're not giving them what they want. If you want to love me, you love me the way I say I need to be loved. If you want to love me. And I'm not talking anything crazy, ungodly, but I mean, if you want to love them, you got to find out what their definition of love is. Because after all, you're not self-seeking. You're not trying to take your set of values and love them with your set of values, because you all come from different backgrounds, different households. What worked for your father don't work for your husband. What worked for your mother don't work for your wife. You got to find out what rings that person's bell. Honey, I like it when after a long day you rub my feet. Well, you may not particularly like feet. You might have a hard time getting around the bunions and the corns. But if she like you rubbing your feet, say, baby, bring them dogs on up here. Let me rub them. Rub my baby's feet. If that's what she likes, because she's letting you know that makes me feel special. You know, that makes me feel special. You know, honey, I don't know. I'm just kind of funny. Maybe I've been watching too many movies, but, you know, I'm kind of romantic. Something about coming home from work and a hot bath is run for me. I get home at the same time every day, 5. You think you can run me a bath? You ain't making her do it, but you're letting her know that would really be special to me. Because think about it. If you did everything in that person's mind that they required to feel special, don't you think they would feel loved by you? Yeah. Of course they would, because that's what they want. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. So it's just a matter of finding out what they want and doing it, instead of taking what your father wanted, giving your husband that, and getting upset when he's not happy. Goes back to the story of my old pastor in Detroit. When he got married, his wife comes from a family. 12 kids. And then mom and dad, and his dad made good money, but when you got 12 kids, it don't go as far as it goes when his family had 3 kids. Both their dads made pretty good money. But they could live at a higher standard than the other ones. Now, at his dad's house, dinner was formal. That mom wouldn't put the good china out for company. She put the good china out for her family. They'd have full course meals. Mom's stay-at-home mom. Everything was laid. It was ready. They had the different courses. They all sat down and ate together. But the household that had 12 or 13, they ate. Their definition of dinner was a big pot of spaghetti or chili or something, a little piece of bread on the side and a free fall. Hey, I done cooked it. And mom walk away. And everybody just get some when they can until it's all gone. So they go on their honeymoon and they find out the honeymoon was over when they got back. Because he comes in the house after work. And he comes in and she got this pot of spaghetti. He said it was big enough to feed an army. You know what I'm saying? It was big enough to feed an army because she ain't used to making small pork, just the two of them. She's used to cooking for her brothers and sisters. And he looked at it and then he said she had a salad, a glass of Kool-Aid and a big kettle of spaghetti. And he looked at it and you know, he trying to be nice, but he said that really offended him. We're talking about this background creating problems in communication. Find out what makes your spouse happy. Forget about what makes your dad and your mom happy. Find out what makes them feel loved. She was so happy. Here he is. I'm a newlywed. I love my husband. We had a great honeymoon. I cooked my first meal for him in our house. And she is. Can you imagine how she would feel? I love this. This is wonderful. Life is great. And he looks at her like, what did I do to you that you give me this? I mean, is this it? It's all there is. Why? Because he's like, if my mother did this to my father, it was because she was mad at him. So what did I do to you that you would do this to me? Differences in background. There's no right or wrong. That definition of dinner is as valid as the other definition. They lived all their life eating like that. He lived all his life eating like that. But one thinking this way, one thinking that way, decided they're going to come together now. Place for contention and conflict. How are we going to deal with this? We have to define for me and for you what dinner is. And we got to define it somewhere in the middle. Now, she probably didn't have no problem with that, but she might not know how to do that. Not all women know how to cook and how to time things, you know, so that you put the right stuff in the same oven at the same time so it all come out at the same time. This would be ready, and then that's coming out later if she don't know how to cook. But his mom had all experience. She knew how to do that. Her mom them obviously didn't do it like that. So he's got to realize he can't expect that from this woman he married because she has not been modeled that. So he's got to understand who he married, what her capabilities are, and he either has to give her time to learn, find someone to help teach her, or just say, this is fine. This is who I married. And that's going to be the safest. Just leave her alone. Can I have a second cup of Kool-Aid with that? And you better be happy. And if it's that big an issue, you better solve it before you say I do, because once you say I do, you did. Yes, I do take thee. If that's something that's that important to you, find it out. If not, accept the other person. Now, the arguments and the fights, they get to going and people get all upset and acting ugly with each other. And the communication is the only thing that's going to resolve differences. You did not grow up in your wife's house. You did not grow up in your husband's home, their parents. So you are different from them. It's OK to be different, but you cannot say I'm right and you're wrong. You're just different. Yeah, but that, you know, this is what dinner is. That's not dinner. Why is that not dinner? Many homes in America, that's dinner. Some people have less than that's dinner. Mom and dad both work. They buy the groceries. That's dinner. Whatever you make is your dinner. There's no right or wrong. Yeah, but this is better based on whose background, based on whose definition. We have to stop the competition of my way is right because I know that everything in my brain and all my experiences establish the sum total of truth. And what you think and your family, all y'all crazy anyway. So I'm here to enlighten you all. People don't take kindly to that kind of thinking. And the longer it takes us to learn, they don't take kindly to you trying to be right all the time and always insisting on your own way and your own right. The longer it's going to take before your marriage is sweet and harmonious. Still trying to make somebody else be you and think like you. There are folks who do it, quote unquote, better than your family did it. Would you like somebody marrying you, pressuring you all the time? Or let's just redefine it. If you want to do it, I mean, if she understands what you want or what you define it as, which you should discuss all this before you get married. But if you didn't, if you define it as that, you got to realize there's a point to where you're just going to have to make an exception on the benefit of how important is it really? I'll have my spaghetti. I'll get this. If I got a salad there and I'll take a multivitamin. If you want to do some special cooking, she probably not be that offended with you doing your special cooking. If you say you ain't going to eat hers, you doing your own cooking, and that could be offensive. That could be very offensive. But you want to be careful that you accept the other person, because how much value is peace in your relationship? How highly do you value that? And peace can't be defined as you getting your way all the time. How can we stop the argument? I can stop pressing them in issues where they disagree with me, and they can stop pressuring me, and we can grow together. Or we can keep pressing each other and standing our ground and keeping score and fighting until we get it fixed. There's something called a cycle of discommunication. A cycle of discommunication. And what happens in this cycle of discommunication? Okay, let's call that cycle of discommunication. You have today, some of you will leave and you'll say, that's communication. I scribbled it out. Some of you will say, okay, pastor said it's good to communicate because the problems we have. And I know all of you know there's some things you'd like the other person to know. Okay, so we want to communicate. That's a good thing. We've done this before. We've said we're going to sit down and talk about it. I read a book and it said we ought to talk about it. So let's talk about it. Now, what happens? You begin to say to that person, honey, you know, I'm not trying to pressure you or anything, but I would, you know, I would like it if you'd wash all the clothes every week. Or you can say vice versa. She says, honey, I'm here all day and I'd like it if you take me out some of the time like we used to. Or I'd like you to just talk nicer to me. You know, or I'd like you to be more sensitive to me in bed and not so physical and throwing me around. You know what I mean? Whatever it is, whatever desire she has, whatever desire he has, they sit down and they talk about that. Okay? Now that starts. Now the person says that. In the beginning of discommunication, as soon as the other person begins to communicate, like, I don't like what you said. I don't like what you said. Now, they're not communicating to you for you to like it or dislike it. So it's irrelevant what you like. But we make sure we let the other person know we don't like it, though, don't we? And that's not even the point of it. That's the start of discommunication, because that is a statement from somebody who is unwilling to even hear what the other person's saying. Because when they say, I don't like what you're saying, they're saying, don't ever say that again. And a person must be free to communicate whatever they feel is a problem. You don't have to agree with it, and you don't have to take it as the gospel truth. But you do need to know what's in your wife's mind, and you do need to know what's in your husband's mind. Because people are changing over time. As you get older, everybody, you might have married her, and she might have been this girl here, and he might have been this guy here. And 5 years later, things happen in life, and they change. Two things that change people dramatically are being born again and education. You might have had this little silly bebop teenager, but then this person goes to college. Maybe something that comes in their life that influences them to go and they get a master's degree, and then they go on, and then you stopped at your regular degree. You just stop. And I mean, when I say stop, not didn't get further education, you stopped reading, you stopped everything. That person would be a different person than who you marry, because that person has now read. Maybe even that person may have traveled or something. But education changes people. People do not stay the same. And the only way your relationship is going to stay the way it was when you first got married is you're going to have to continue understanding where they're at so you can adjust them. Particularly if a woman wants to be a helpmeet. If she wants to be the counterpart, if she wants to fit with her husband, she needs to understand where he is and he needs to understand where she is and her life cycle changes. Where is she at? Because people can outgrow each other. And they do outgrow each other, especially if you got one that's reading, studying. Maybe he's at a job. I mean, we saw this happen in Bible school. They warn people against it. People will come to school and you have a situation where they really don't have that much money. They should wait a little longer. But they come and the husband goes to Bible school. He's getting intensive Bible study, 15 hours a week. And what is that? Actually, about 15 hours a week minimum. Then you got church. You got everything else. She's not able to go to school. And they used to say, go home and teach your wife what you're learning. Let her read the book. Share that with her, because he just glows right by her spiritually. And then a year later, he's making decisions for God and God's put things in his heart 2 years later, 3 years later. And she's looking like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. What happened? He outgrew her. You need to try and commit things that are changing you. You need to communicate that to other people. If you're in school and she's not in school, you can say, oh, today we had a class, or she might even want to ask, honey, what'd you do today? Oh, we had a class today. It was on psychology. It was interesting. You got to teach the whole class to them, but tell them enough that they understand where you're at and that they can relate to you, because you can outgrow somebody where you don't even relate anymore. That was one of the problems when women stayed at home watching soap operas all day long. And the man's out in a job is working his mind. He comes home and finds out his wife has become a simpleton. Soap operas are mostly a waste of time. The nighttime dramas and the day dramas. I mean, if you let yourself watch one that's not full of sex and seeing all that, it might be okay. Maybe it's a little funny or something. But you can't spend too much time. If that's your major source of learning, your major source of education, you're in trouble. Now, if you and your husband enjoy them together, you both can be simple together and be happy. But if one of you got better sense than that, you'll find stuff like, he may come in and sit down in there doing some reading, then you flip on some goofy show or some silly movie, then he'll get up and go to another room. And you don't know why he's doing that. Maybe he's going to get in bed. A lot of times he just don't want to be with nothing that simple. And that's not saying it's sin or it's wrong. You might enjoy it. But some of the evenings you might want to consider the fact of, honey, what are you reading? Or what do you think? What have you read lately that you think I would like? Something to expand yourself also. Because it's good for both of you to grow. Now, I'm going to tell you something. You may not like it a whole lot. You ain't going to dislike me saying it, but you probably going to do it. Turn that TV off for 1 month. No TV in the house in the evening for 1 month. You'd be surprised how much better your relationship will get. Or at least how much earlier everybody will go to bed. I guarantee you'll find that. Because TV is one of the most destructive things to an intimate marriage has ever been created. Because people sit there and look at the boob tube together, and they call that their time alone. Alone with the TV, each of them individually. Alone with the TV. No wonder you don't know that person. You don't ever talk to them. You're not going to know God if you don't spend time with them. Not in the same place at the same time, with them, conversing, communicating. If there's a problem in communication, you're growing different ways and you don't even know the difference. That piece of paper, I tell you, you can fill that out now, and probably 6 months or 12 months later, you fill it out different. We passed it out last year in the church on the series Love, Hate, Communicate, when we talked about that for 15 weeks. And guarantee you, some of you fill it out now, you fill it out different, because you're changing. There's different needs in your life. Most men are going to have sex pretty high up there. Most women are going to have affection or time with family, husband being with the family. He's not going to have that. He usually doesn't have it that high, somewhere around the middle. But he's going to have sex up there pretty high, because men need what they need, and women's going to have emotional things pretty high. And that's normal, to be expected. But the problem is when a man puts something high up there on the woman's that she's got way at the bottom. Because when he wants to do something nice for his wife, he does what he thinks she wants. But he didn't realize she's changed. That's not that important to her anymore. But yet he keeps doing it anyway because it worked before. Same thing with physical contact. Maybe some lady said, well, look, I want something to be a little bit different. May not, but sometimes they do, but they don't communicate. They think the man just knows. And he says, if it worked last time, it worked this time. Make it easy for me. Same thing. Men are pretty much, because of the way the bodies are made, there's things we can go into. We don't have time to deal with this. But there are reasons physiologically why a woman's body is swinging. Her body, because of her hormonal cycle, is very cyclical. There are areas of her body you can touch that are so sensitive at certain times of month, it annoys her. But when you touched it last week, it was working for her. And a man's going to go right back to that. And if she doesn't tell him, honey, that's not very comfortable. I prefer if you just held me. I prefer if you just kissed me. Instead, you just sit there and it's like, I don't know why you're doing that for. I don't know why you're doing that. That hurts. And sometimes just that hurts. You know, a woman, I hear it. I have it. You know, Helen, I've gone through it. I hear it in counseling. What happened there? Somebody didn't communicate. Because we're thinking everybody else can read our minds. They know what we want. Communication is going to be key to all of this. Now, in this communication, you communicate it. You got to be able to listen or you don't deserve to be married to anybody. You've got to be able to listen to somebody say something that you don't like without you getting all upset about it. You've got to be able to hear it. If somebody looked at you and said, baby, I don't want you to change or nothing, but that you do what you want. Well, I ain't going to say I don't want to change. You can do whatever you want to. But, you know, when you come to bed with that perfume on, it's like it makes me want to throw up. It's just nauseous, you know. Like, we'll make love and it's the stench that comes and it's your perfume or it's your cologne or I don't like that, you know. You know, or honey, like, you know, I just don't like that. honey, you know, in the evening, you know, I'd like to go shopping and get you some nice things to wear. When you come to bed, I'd like you to wear these nice, pretty things. You know, you don't look good in burlap, baby. You don't look good in sackcloth and ashes, you know? And what do you say, women? But it's comfortable. He ain't interested in comfortable. I used to tell Helen, she said, well, that other stuff is uncomfortable. I said, you ain't going to wear it long. You can't worry about being uncomfortable. You put on the right one, you can put whatever you want on later. I just tell you like it is. How many brothers say that's the way it is? You ain't got to wear it long. You know what I'm saying? You ain't got to wear it for a long time. I said, I should be able to want my wife like that. It ain't nothing dirty. That's my wife. God said, I can look at my wife how I want to look at my wife. Don't be fantasizing, making up crazy stuff in your mind about making love to some other woman. But I said, I can want to frame my wife to what rings my bell. There ain't nothing wrong with that at all. And a man can wear what she wants. I ain't in the Speedos. They cut and they ride up and all that. But if my wife said, I want you in some Speedos, I can wear Speedos long as I ain't gonna wear them long. You see what I'm saying? I'm talking about you. We laughing, but this stuff is real. These are the things to bother people. It bothers them. It bothers most men. Now, it depends on where you are in life and where your sexual desire is. But it bothers most men when a woman looks like a man coming to bed. Grabs his T-shirt. You mind if I wear one of your T-shirts? Yeah, if you got to. But see, that don't turn a man on, a woman dressed like a man. And there's things that women wear that men don't wear. And most men like to see women in that. But then women are afraid, well, you don't love me, you love these clothes. He likes the whole package. And I guarantee you, he's not going to take your clothes off and tell you to go in the other room. He's going to be after you. You just love my body. Well, that's a part of you. We talk about physical love. He ain't loving your mind. We talk about physical love. See, but women have been taught that that cheapens them. That a man, now he should not only love her body, but he should love your body. But a lot of women don't love their body because they don't fit the airbrushed, photo, anorexic, unrealistic model who they say is beautiful. Because they don't fit that, they don't like themselves. Some men say, well, honey, let's make love with the lights on. No. And if that's your preference, it's fine. I'm not choosing your behavior. But I'm saying if the reason behind that is that you don't like the way you look, it doesn't matter if he likes the way you look. Because you close your eyes. You ain't got to look at you. But see, he may like it. I had one guy I was talking to. He said, I was a pastor. He was saying, you know, I tell you what. He said, I'm just like this. I like the light on because he said, I like to see what I'm getting. I like what I'm getting and I like to see it. That was his mind. And was there anything wrong with that? No. Was that dirty? No. Was that nasty? No. It's all kind of things the world has taught us that we think are nasty. The world's doing all of it, but somehow we thinking it's nasty, it's dirty because it's worldly. There are a lot of things in the world where they're actually freer in physical love than a lot of Christians are. Because they're stuck up in all kind of things in their mind. There's a book I recommend to the ladies in there called Intimate Issues. It's a book I recommend to men and ladies in there called The Gift of Sex, which puts things into balance and into perspective. There's a lot of things people put their idiosyncrasies over on other people. The Bible says the marriage room, the bedroom is undefiled. That means if you and two aren't forcing things on each other, you have at it, whatever works for you. And that's a lot of freedom to a lot of people that a lot of people don't allow them to have. They're speaking for God where God is silent and just say the marriage bedroom is undefiled. A lot of people don't like that. I said, that's fine. There's things I don't prefer, but I can't get up here and preach bondage on the people on my preferences one way or the other. You have to give the liberties that Christ gives. But then again, even in situations like this, if you talk about sex, sometimes some men or women are so doggone prudish, so bashful, they pretend like sex doesn't exist. So they go around wanting it, but want to pretend like we're not doing it. So we definitely can't discuss it. And you need to discuss it to be mutually satisfying to one another. I told you earlier, men, you need to supply your wife's needs first. Because a woman takes a little longer to build up, physiological reasons, don't have time to go into it, but a woman takes a little bit longer to warm up. Men don't take as long, but if a man goes ahead, ain't gonna be nothing left when you get through. And if you're married, you probably know that. He roll over the other way and that's that. That's all it is. It's over with. And a lot of times that woman's sitting there talking about, how come it's so easy for a man and so hard for a woman? And he's like, baby, I don't know what's wrong with you. You're what's wrong with her. No woman, well, maybe a few, but very few women. The older they get a little better at experiencing that. But younger women particularly have a harder time having orgasms. And a woman's not going to have it all the time anyway. Because sometimes she's not ready for all this emotion. It is a loving thing when a wife says, young wife, says to her young husband, honey, I don't really need it right now, but I want to be a blessing to you. And then when she tells him that, he ain't got to go through all the foreplay. He ain't got to go through all that. He can just love his wife. It feels like he's just using me. The Bible says some have sinned and turned away from the use of a woman. Use is not negative. We say use, not abuse. You did not abuse your wife. But a lot of people don't understand that. They can't hear you say use and it not be negative, because we grew up in high school. He's using that girl. Well, that was wrong because they weren't married. Not because it's wrong for a man and woman who are married to be together. It depends on that age cycle and physical moods and a portion of the month with her hormones. Her sexual desire is going to swing. But his is going to be pretty stable, and it'll change over years, but it's going to be pretty stable. When he's young, he's going to want his baby. He's going to want to be with his baby. He has a right to be with her. She should be with him, with the exception of like something that's just out of ordinary. You know, she's sick. She's bleeding. She's got a headache. She's just particularly tired. But women come into the office sometime and they live on that. He just wants me too much. What is too much? Do you mean he wants you more than you want physical contact? I tell her, I said, well, don't sow seeds you'll want to reap, because time's going to come when you'll probably want him more than he wants you. And you'll be reaping what you've sown. But sometimes that takes 15 years, 20 years before they start reaping that crop. And men, pretty much, when they ain't interested, they tell you they ain't interested. And a lot of older women are saying, you know, he just don't want me like he used to. Maybe I'm not attractive anymore. I say, no, baby, you still pretty as ever. Well, how come you don't want me? I just don't need, nothing wrong with you. And they don't understand, but you're reaping what you've sown. I don't know why God made it that way, other than to say God says we're to be ruled by the law of love. It's more blessed to give than it is to receive. I think it's Acts 20:35. It's more blessed to give than it is to receive. And it gives us the opportunity to give to one another on alternate basis, at alternate needs. This communication, all these problems again, communicate. If this person, after this seminar, has enough courage to come to you and say, honey, I don't want to fight with you. I'm not trying to argue with you, but there's something that I have a need for. I'm not even asking you to do it, but inside of me, because of the way I think, because of the background I had, these are things that I would like. Somebody ought to be able to give you a list of things they'd like, and you not look at it and say, this is what I got to do. No, they're not saying this is what you got to do. Just in case you care to love me, wouldn't you like to know what I call loving me? In case you want to, because very often the person does want to love them, but they want to love them the way they want to love them, because they don't want to listen to the other person telling that, because every time they do that, the devil say, they're blaming you. Blame pops up out of it. I mean, if you have that mentality, that is the, I don't like what you said. What difference does it make? They have a right to say it, don't they? Let them say it. If somebody says something you don't like, just hear it. Hear it for what it's worth and go on about your business. But at least if they did say something, the communication is now information you might be able to use to bless them if you choose to. But if you never got the information because they're afraid to talk to you because you're going to start a fight and get defensive, you cut off the lines of communication. And where there's no communication, there's no growing together. There's no agreement. How can the two walk together? How can there be peace and harmony? The discommunication makes you unhappy. I don't know. I'm be happy listening to him say all those things about me I don't like. Well, are they really about you directly, or is he just letting you know what he needs? And that's why I say you can't demand. Don't let them hear you demanding. Just share with them. I mean, it would do good if you went home and you said sometime this week, you set a time, not after 10 p.m., late at night when everybody's tired, to be discussing issues. Sometime where you're awake, maybe on the weekend or early in that evening, and say, honey, kid's gone to bed. Pastor said we can discuss some things. I want you to go on Tuesday, and then I'll go on Thursday, and then I want to discuss them. And I'm not going to defend myself. I'm not going to argue. I just honestly want to hear. But if you can't talk because emotions are too high, you're out of control. You don't have your emotions under control. I can't help how I feel. You can help how you feel, and you have what you say. You can help how you feel. You don't have to react like it. Even if you feel it, you don't have to act crazy about it. Even if you think it, you don't have to act crazy with it. You need to hear what they have to say. Don't take it as criticism. Take it as knowledge. I need to know what would make you happy. What would I need to do for you to be totally happy that you married me? And that list would be things you probably heard before.
And if you're really mature enough, they better tell you things you need to hear that they've been afraid to tell you because of the way you act. Because there's things, see, Helen and I are pretty close, but we're not as intimate as I'd like us to be, because there's things I'm sure she wants to tell me that she won't tell me for fear I'm going to react crazy. And I know there's things I don't want to tell her, but I can't tell her for fear she's going to act crazy. What does that mean? We don't trust each other to the fullest yet. We trust each other a lot more than we did when we got married. But we haven't reached that. I mean, it's a beautiful thing when a man or woman can say anything they want to say, even in the wrong tone. Not intentionally. Try not to say something wrong tone. But even if they're mad and it comes out and the other person not get defensive. That's a miracle of communication in a relationship. There are people who have reached that point in a relationship where they can say anything. Isn't that the intimacy you want, women? I can say anything to my husband. If he can't say anything to you, you're not ever going to be able to say anything to him, and vice versa is true also. Can I tell you some weird thought I had? Can I tell you some problem I'm having? Let's say you got a guy. Trying to think of some of the things we cross here in counseling or that I read in a book somewhere. Take example. You got a guy. Says, Pastor Cook, you know, I love my wife with all my heart, but, you know, she's kind of shutting me down. And I look at other women, and when I see a pretty woman, I just think of being physically, and it just makes me mad at my wife. He should be able to say that to his wife. But how would she act? Most likely in that situation where she's shutting him down, she would not take that the right way. But he needs to be able to say to her that. He needs to be able to say, honey, me not being able to relate to you is causing some pressure in my mind and in my body that's just making things harder for me. I mean, it's the Bible. The Bible says, turn over in Ephesians. Let's flip back to the Bible.
This is the conclusion of Part A. Please insert Part B for the continuation of the message.